All right, thank you very much. So welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have a total of 5 matters on our oral argument calendar. We've reached the third one. So I'm ready for the marshal to call that case. I see the lawyers present and on the screen. So go ahead, Mr. Marshall.
Now calling case A21-0036 in the appeal of Jared Cunningham re DHS appeal for maltreatment of a minor.
All right, and counsel, I'll just make a few remarks before we go ahead. I know that everyone's had their connections checked already, and you have instructions on what to do were you to lose a connection with the court. We are proceeding today by a video conferencing, but in all other respects, our procedures are the same as they would be in a courtroom. I will ask you to identify yourself before you start your argument, and that's done for the record because the audio recording is maintained on our website. Also, identify the client you represent. And then keep your eye on the clock. It should be visible on your screen. You each start with 15 minutes, 5 minutes for rebuttal, and it tends to go quickly. We really appreciate hearing from you today during the course of the argument. So with that, I think we're ready to begin. Counsel for appellant, you can begin.
Hello, my name is Krista Groshek, and I represent appellant Jared Cunningham.
You can begin, counsel.
I understand. No, I thought we were
sorry
ourselves. No worries. This case is really all about attorney malfeasance, whether you call it ineffective assistance of counsel, you call it attorney neglect or malpractice. That's the problem here. And unlike most of the cases that are cited in the memos, there's one that addresses this issue, and that's Armstrong versus Heckman. And this case is instructive for this court because what it does is it takes a look at when an attorney neglects their duties, what's the remedy? And there's a 4-factored analysis that this court should apply to this case to vacate the judgment from the fair hearing judge who said, hey, you missed your deadline, Mr. Cunningham. What's different about all the cases that respondent cites is that there might have been cases respondent cites about deadlines, but there is no case that respondent cites where an attorney missed the deadline. Pursuant to the ALJ's order, one of the findings of fact was that my client hired an attorney to address his criminal action as well as his maltreatment action, believed that the attorney had done that, didn't learn until much later when he had to undergo a background check with his hospital that, in fact, that maltreatment determination was never appealed. Initially, he thought that there was at least a reconsideration request filed, but he came to learn after he contacted that attorney that, in fact, that attorney didn't even do that. And so we don't have a request for reconsideration. We also don't have a request for a fair hearing. The attorney owns that. I was surprised at our district court hearing that counsel for the agency was arguing there was nothing in the record supporting that the attorney had been hired to appeal this maltreatment determination that's at issue here when the ALJ made specific findings of fact that, in fact, that was true. We submitted documents in rebuttal, exhibits A and B, wherein the attorney of record specifically acknowledges to the agency, this is my fault. I didn't appeal this.
I want to assure you that at least, and of course, counsel for respondent will speak for herself, but and for her client, but that's the way I read the record. The issue is not what caused the delay in filing this request for a fair hearing. That, based on the record, is attorney neglect. And I think even there's no dispute that if we were looking at a good cause extension under the statute, that in all likelihood, there isn't a dispute that attorney neglect in failing to file timely is perhaps excusable neglect and would provide good cause. At least that's not necessary for us, I don't think, to get into in this case.
Very good.
So starting there, I think what I'm struggling with, counsel, is it seems to me you are asking us to determine that there has been an error made in not somehow extending the time period for making a request for a fair hearing based on this 2016 maltreatment determination. And I don't see any statutory authority for this court or for that matter, for any court to make that?
I think the statutory authority is under 256, and that's the excusable neglect that Your Honor just referenced. It doesn't specifically...
That's limited to 90 days, a request for a fair hearing made within 90 days.
It is.
So what do we do, counsel? I appreciate your fairness argument very much. I mean, it is obviously really, it's more than unfortunate that it's a minimal statement, but it's very distressing that your client has not had that opportunity to challenge the maltreatment determination that he would like to challenge. But it is as a result of not having made a timely request. And in our case law, and I'll point you to the Smith decision, this court determined that there isn't another option. I mean, the statutory scheme does not provide one. So what do we do?
So, Judge, I think that we find ourselves in a position that is one that has not yet been litigated in this context of maltreatment and fair hearing appeals. I couldn't find any case where we were dealing with attorney neglect, right? We could find cases where probably when we looked at, if we look at district court opinions where appellants simply miss their deadlines and they get dismissed and they never make their way to you. But you have a really unique case here where we've got an appellant who hired an attorney to do a job and he didn't do it. And because my client is a nurse, he's facing drastic and dire consequences that can only be remedied by this court giving him an opportunity to have a fair hearing. He's not going to get his job back if he files a malpractice action against the lawyer. He's not going to be able to fight any disqualification that comes thereafter made by the Department of Human Services. His only chance to clear the record, and he's got a good opportunity to do it based upon his success in criminal court, right? He was able to persuade 12 people from the community that he didn't commit the offense in question. His only opportunity is to go back, have the fair hearing, and clear his name, because on his SSIS background check, he's listed to have committed an act of maltreatment against, I believe, not one, but two children, and that's sexual abuse. And so we have a unique situation, is my point. And I think it requires the court to look to case law, even though there's not a statutory option that extends beyond the 90 days. And for the request for reconsideration, it's 15.
So, counsel, I need some legal authority for this court to act. And that's what I don't see in your brief. I mean, we interpret and we apply the law. We don't make the law. And with that in mind, are you contending some sort of inherent authority? Or I'm just struggling here because you reasoned by analogy, for instance, to Rule 60 and civil procedure. You reasoned by analogy to post-conviction petitions. But none of those provisions apply to this situation. And so how does this court act? That's what I'm looking for.
I believe that this court has the authority under Armstrong v. Heckman to take a look at attorney negligence. I understand that the statute doesn't specifically cite to attorney negligence and the 90 days and extensions beyond that, but I think this is an extraordinary situation. I think we're looking at due process considerations. I think we're looking at my client's property interest and his nursing license because it's directly attached to the decision that the fair hearing judge made, and that maltreatment standing now will put him in a position where...
Tell me out, counsel, what were the facts in Armstrong that you find so analogous to this situation?
Well, the facts in Armstrong is that that was a motor vehicle case. And in that instance, there was the plaintiff who failed to update the court by standing order of the Hennepin County chief judge saying that the case was still in play. Because of that failure to update the court, then there was just an automatic dismissal. Now, that happened almost a year and a half prior to the attorneys figuring it out that there was a standing order. They needed to update on all their cases. And they did do that except for the one in question, except for Armstrong's case. So Armstrong's case gets dismissed. They figure it out sometime later. And then the attorneys went back to the court and said, hey, we missed this deadline, right? And you've dismissed the case. Please relieve our client of this judgment because it was our mistake. And here's all the reasons we screwed up. And here's the factored analysis that allows you to vacate that adverse judgment.
So it sounds like this is a Rule 60 motion. Is that right?
I think
civil case?
Mm-hmm. It is. But I think it's analogous to 14.69. That's the whole purpose for parties who are aggrieved by agency decisions that tried, when my client tried to go through the fair hearing process and was unable to do so. You look at 14.69, there's all these reasons that a district court judge could reverse and remand back to a fair hearing. And I think that Rule 60 is very similar. When you look at relief from a judgment due to excusable neglect, that's not only written into 256, but that is essentially what 1469 does, right? It allows the person aggrieved by the fair hearing decision relief from that order, essentially for good cause. And unfortunately for my client, there isn't a bevy of case law where attorneys are missing deadlines. I don't believe that should put him in a position where now he's simply stuck with the statute, like the person who ignored the mail, didn't seek counsel, and just missed their deadline. And then later now are trying to come back and say, well, I'm sorry, right? I think we have a unique situation and we have to look to things like the Constitution, the Due Process Clause. We have to look to case law about attorney neglect. And the only case on point about attorney neglect is Armstrong versus Heckman. And I do think that Rule 60 and Statute 14.69 aren't all that different. I mean, the whole reason people who are aggrieved by agency actions get to come to district court and then later possibly appeal to this panel to see you is to correct the mistakes. And this is a mistake of law, is my position. Yes, you can look at the black letter law, but there's also this requirement of justice and fairness and applying facts to unique situations. And, you know, apparently there's a lot of lawyers in Minnesota that don't miss deadlines, that, you know, do what their clients ask them to do. But we know case law says that when an attorney misses an appellate deadline, that's malpractice per se. There's no way around it. And it is very concerning that my client would be hamstrung in such a profound way, lose his livelihood, his ability to be a nurse, his ability to practice in an area that he's been in for decades, because his attorney screwed up. There has to be some redress under very broad principles. We're talking about due process. Simply because the statute doesn't reference due process, we all know it has to exist. We all know that it applies. And there has to be relief from judgments, especially where we have an attorney who made the mistake, not a litigant. This is not a situation where a litigant is coming in and saying I was sick or I had other issues, right? This is an attorney that made a mistake. And that reminds me of the case that counsel cites. And this was in Lemieux, Great American Insurance versus Lemieux. And this is where counsel says, well, you can't apply Rule 60 to maltreatment determinations. Well, much different situation here. We don't have attorney neglect. We essentially have the wife of the person who was injured, who was later than applying for MA benefits, who talked with an attorney, but just didn't make her deadline, chose not to apply, maybe later realizing, whoa, there's a lot of money here that we don't have to be spending if we could get my husband on MA. That's a much different situation where you have an attorney saddled with the responsibility, retained and paid to do a job, and they don't make it. And the reason why we have to look to broad principles like the Constitution, like due process, like Matthews versus Eldridge, is because this is the only form in which my client can seek relief from that ALJ's finding. No malpractice appeal, no DQ appeal, that none of that will help him. He has to be able to get access to a fair hearing, and it doesn't prejudice the agency. These fair hearings, I'm sure as the court knows, they basically go by paper, and you get all the police reports and you get the witness statements and the corner house videos all go to the judge in a package. There is very rarely any live testimony from any complaining witnesses or alleged victims. The same case file the county had 3 years ago, 4 years ago, they still have now. And it's the same paper and the same videos that they're going to submit to the court. And they're going to say, hey, we think this adds up to maltreatment. The social worker's notes will go in. There's no prejudice. The only person who suffers prejudice as a result of his attorney's malfeasance is my client. And this is the only access to justice that he will have. And so good on Minnesota attorneys for not missing deadlines. All the other cases do not involve attorney neglect except for Armstrong. And that's what instructs this court to be able to say, yes, we understand there are these statutory guidelines, but we have to address this major issue of fairness. And perhaps the court finds itself in a position to make new law. But I think there's very good reason to do so, because I don't think this was contemplated under the statute. 256 didn't contemplate attorneys missing deadlines, quite frankly, because it doesn't happen very often. But it did happen.
I just have to stop you briefly, because yes, it did. It did contemplate it to the extent that there's a 90-day extension for good cause. But there just isn't an extension beyond that 90 days. So that's, again,
I agree with you. That's true.
And I very much appreciate the basis for your argument, and that your client, as you've indicated, is in a position where this court has to determine the timeliness of his claim, and whether it, as was decided by the Smith court, whether that it is effectively a statute of limitations and there is no further avenue for your client to challenge the maltreatment determination.
And I would argue to the court that it's not a statute of limitations. The way the statute is written does require these deadlines, but I don't believe...
You're absolutely right. It's not a statute of limitations. I think the Smith opinion stated it was operates like a statute of limitations.
And I would say that there's nothing in the statute allowing this court to apply that kind of strict standard to 256.
So counsel, I will, of course, take this up. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal, but I want to make sure that we get a chance to hear from respondent as well. So we are resetting the clock, and counsel for respondent, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you. Excuse me, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Amy Capelli, and I represent the Chisago County Department of Health and Human Services. And we are asking the court today to affirm the decision of the Commissioner of Human Services and also the decision of the district court. Now, the court touched on this, but in this appeal from an administrative agency, the appellant has the burden to show that the relief is warranted under the Administrative Procedures Act. And to do so, appellant has to show this court that the commissioner's decision is affected, essentially, it is the substantial rights of the appellant were prejudiced by the administrative decision if it violates constitutional provisions, is in excess of the statutory jurisdiction of the agency, made upon unlawful procedure, affected by error of law, unsupported by substantial evidence in view of the entire record as submitted, or arbitrary and capricious. That's what 14.69 says. There is no additional basis within 14.69 to say excusable neglect. Now, it may possibly interplay into some of those factors, but in this case, Your Honor, it does not. Appellant cannot make those showings. As the court correctly noted, the Minnesota statutory scheme, which governs administrative appeals, provides specific statutory deadlines. There's the 15-day deadline for requesting reconsideration. There's the 30-day deadline for requesting a hearing by the administrative agency, which does have a good cause provision, which allows an appellant then to request a hearing within 90 days. Good cause is defined. I'm not here to argue today that had appellant discovered this defect within that 90-day period, that good cause wouldn't apply. As the court noted, that's not really relevant to this decision today. The issue before the court is there is no statutory authority for the court to allow someone to challenge an administrative appeal or administrative decision without exhausting their administrative remedies in a timely manner. And as correctly noted by the Commissioner of Human Services in the order dismissing the appellant's appeal, there may, in some situations, be a statute which would toll a limit set forth in the statute. So there may be a statutory authority for saying, well, this 90-day provision doesn't apply if this, but that does not exist in this case. And there's no need, Your Honors, to look at the statutes involving post-conviction relief. There's no need to look at Civil Rule 60 because the courts have previously addressed the issue of untimely appeals, as noted and relied upon by the county in our motion or in our responsive memorandum, the Smith case indicates that if those deadlines are not met, the appeal is time barred, I believe, is what the Smith case says.
So, Ms. Capelli, I have a question about the potential futility of a fair hearing in this case. Even if the deadlines had been met and there had been a hearing, given the timing of the events in this case, where there was a trial, you know, a substantial time after the maltreatment finding was made, where there was a CHIPS matter resolved, a substantial time after the maltreatment finding was made, what remedy could a person possibly have for a futile fair hearing, even if the statutory deadlines had been complied with, to go back and challenge a maltreatment finding based on new evidence, new circumstances?
Your Honor, I think that there is not that type of remedy set forth within the statute. And the reason for that, Your Honor, is I think the statutory scheme, when taken as a whole, prefers quick and efficient and final resolution of administrative decisions. And that's because the governmental body, the state or human services in this case, has an interest in protecting the public from individuals it's determined have committed maltreatment, especially in programs that are served or serving people who may have vulnerabilities. But in this case, I think, Your Honor, it's not factual. Aside from the allegations of attorney malfeasance, the factual scenario is not unlike the facts in Smith. It's not unlike facts in many non-presidential opinions, which would be Bennett, I believe, versus Commissioner of Human Services, Jackson versus Commissioner of Human Services. And in those cases, specifically, I believe in Bennett, which I didn't cite in my brief, was a non-presidential opinion, but I think the facts are analogous here. In Bennett, an individual was determined to have committed maltreatment by sexual abuse. In Bennett, he was charged, this individual, but acquitted. Additionally, I think this is the case where there was also an expungement. But even with that information subsequent to the maltreatment determination and the disqualification in that case, the Court of Appeals upheld or affirmed, I guess, the decision of the agency. And then I believe the Jackson case is the case where an individual was found to have committed maltreatment by sexual abuse. This individual, I don't believe, was ever charged. However, there was a child protection case, which resulted in a voluntary termination of parental rights. And again, the Court of Appeals upheld the agency's maltreatment determination in that situation. Your Honors, if in fact appellant's prior counsel mishandled his case, he may have a remedy against his attorney in a legal malpractice lawsuit.
Can I just ask, though, in a legal malpractice action, which, you know, under the circumstances here would certainly be a reasonable avenue of relief, would there be any remedy for this finding in a licensure matter? I mean, can we address the maltreatment finding in the context of a malpractice action somehow?
Well, I think, Your Honor, there's a couple of things at play here, and I'm not going to say that I'm an expert in attorney malpractice, thankfully. But I think what I would say is that a maltreatment determination by the Department of Human Services, has a certain time period for which that remains in effect. So I believe the maltreatment determination itself is a 7-year disqualification from working in licensed programs. The appellant is licensed by either the Department of Health or the Board of Nursing. So the appellant actually has a separate administrative avenue to pursue through the board by which he is licensed. And I don't know, but I know in Department of Human Services matters, the disqualification needs, or in order to be disqualified from holding a position serving licensed individuals, the disqualifying body has to make the decision that the maltreatment is both serious and recurring. We don't know if appellant has gone through that proceeding. We don't know if appellant has challenged any disqualification in that matter. But what we do know is that I think eventually the maltreatment determination itself will no longer be a disqualification under that seven-year provision of Minnesota Statute 245. However, there may be other consequences within the Board of Nursing or Department of Health licensure. I don't know if that answered your question, Your Honor. But in terms of remedies in a malpractice action, I would think that the remedy available to appellant were the court to find that malpractice did occur is that the damages between his what he was earning as a nurse and what he's currently earning. But I think his remedy is not against the county. His remedy is not against the Commissioner of Human Services. The remedy that he's seeking in this case is just simply not available due to his failure to exhaust his administrative remedies in a timely manner. Your Honors, if there are no other questions, I would yield the remainder of my time.
Questions from the panel? Doesn't look like it. So thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
So with that, we are resetting the clock for rebuttal time, 5 minutes for appellant, should you choose to use it. You can proceed.
I do, thanks. I want to just set the record straight. If the agency were to determine based upon the maltreatment determination that can't be undone, because my client right now has no access to a fair hearing, he's headed straight towards a permanent bar. That's a disqualification under 245C.15. It's not a 7-year, it's not a 10-year, it is permanent. When you are disqualified from working with vulnerable adults and children, which could easily happen at any time, if the agency reviews the case and takes a look at whether or not there's a preponderance of evidence that my client committed these sexual acts in question, and based upon the maltreatment that I can't appeal, that the agency could now say is serious and recurring, or simply do a review of his file, he's headed towards a permanent bar. And there's nothing that I can do to undo that maltreatment. And that's why my client finds himself stuck. That's why this is his only avenue to get access to a fair hearing. His remedy is his day in court. And I believe public policy dictates that when a person has an issue, we should err on the side of giving them their day in court. Maybe he'll lose his day in court, but he should have access to that fair hearing. Fair hearings are easygoing. Court takes hearsay in. Court, you know, reviews volumes of paperwork that in district court would otherwise be inadmissible and then decides the proper way. That is the nature of these relaxed proceedings. And as to your honor's question about where's the statutory authority, how can we determine that that Mr. Cunningham should have access to a fair hearing now, right, after missing his deadlines? What we know from how these hearings operate, they're informal. And as to deadlines, 626-556 subdivision 10IB, if the agency fails to act within 15 days after a person who has a maltreatment determination made against them and they ask for reconsideration, if the agency misses their deadline, then the remedy isn't, the appellant wins, but the remedy is the appellant can ask for a fair hearing. They can sort of jump over, if you will, the agency and then ask the commissioner directly for a hearing. So it's built into the statute that the agency can miss their deadlines and the matter doesn't get resolved in favor of the appellant, but it does give the appellant access to a fair hearing still. And I guess what I'd say is, you know, to be colloquial, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If the agency can miss deadlines, if they're not responding timely, right, then certainly in a case of attorney neglect, an attorney missing a deadline, my client should get access to a fair hearing, especially when there's not any prejudice. And so, you know, there are very severe, severe ramifications for my client not being able to challenge these allegations in the context of a fair hearing. If I had to put it bluntly, I'd say the right thing to do is to give him a hearing. Smith, to your point, Your Honor, is not about attorney malfeasance. There's no claim that an attorney missed the deadline to challenge the disqualification in that case and missed it not only once, but twice, and then goes through the process again and gets a third DQ. And they say, hey, you know, you're late. But that's not a case that's really on point here, because we're not talking about attorney neglect. We're not talking about somebody that just blew this off. To the contrary, my client gave an attorney, you know, good, hard-earned money to take care of this problem for him, and he didn't. And there's, like I said, no case that respondent cites, including Smith, that's about attorney neglect. And I think because of that, we've got a whole different issue. And as a result, and especially under the rubric of 626 and the new 260E, with the lax procedure and informal procedure, certainly missing a deadline in this context allows my client access to a fair hearing. I don't have anything else unless the panel has questions for me.
I don't see anything from the panel. And counsel, thank you very much for your argument. Thanks to both lawyers. This matter was very well argued. We appreciate hearing from you. And with that, this matter is submitted to the